de Cuba lo que impuso y que se pega y cuando llega no despega, pega, pega lo que puso el ruso en el discurso que con país segundo puso entre tus cejas.
Ahora la distancia queda.
Hello, Pacifica Radio Network. You're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil. Heard on KPFK Safe Harbor, No Lies Radio, and WRFG on occasion so far. All Pacifica Network radio stations. Our audience is growing. That's because Cynthia's Midnight Oil is raw, uncut, community power for your eardrums. Cynthia's Midnight Oil is where I can tell you the truth. Like this. Tonight's show is dedicated to Mike Rupert, whose birthday was on February 3rd. And I let it pass last week without mentioning Mike. That's shame on me. Mike Rupert was my friend. A true friend in every sense of the word. And because I'm in politics, where it's veritably impossible to cultivate true friendships because everyone wants something from you, it's hard to find folks who like you and you like them for no other reason than that they, of course, are switched on and know what the heck is going on. And then after that, just because Mike Rupert was that kind of guy, gutsy, lots of testosterone. Now, I can't believe I said that. Okay, so now what do I mean by that? Well, you know, when Mike was in the room, he had presence in a totally manly kind of way. He knew his stuff and was willing to take on anybody, even the CIA, which he did when he blew the whistle and confirmed what every black family in the U.S. knew, and that is that the U.S. government was trafficking in crack cocaine in order to devastate the black community. And of course, thereby also devastating its claims for authentic leadership, for neutral public policy. Not even favorable public policy, but just neutral public policy. Every black family in the U.S. was affected by the CIA's relationship with Ricky Freeway Ross, who created crack cocaine. You hear what I'm saying? Because crack cocaine didn't exist until the CIA allowed Ricky Freeway Ross to exist as a crack dealer. Okay, now, what this means is that up until the point when crack was created, cocaine was the drug for affluent people. So with crack, poor people could afford cocaine, and if you target the black community, which was done, then blacks could afford cocaine and be destroyed by it too. You could say that crack cocaine was the fourth rail of U.S. policy toward its black constituents. Slavery, of course, was the first rail, and the U.S. government rode that rail until it couldn't ride it anymore. The second rail was Jim Crow, when states' rights came to be known as the state's right to resist applying the Bill of Rights to its black citizens throughout the U.S. And while I recognize this as tyranny, what do champions of individual rights do when the entire group is being targeted for tyranny? What is my proper response? Seeking individual rights doesn't work in this case, and it's immoral to take care of yourself and not worry about the application of justice across the board. At any rate, that's a conversation that I'm having with myself these days, as I dialogue with those U.S. patriots who champion the rights of the individual. So the second rail of U.S. government policy toward blacks has been to deny application of the Bill of Rights to them as a group. The third rail was to activate the exception clause in the application of the second rail. That is, the government found that utilizing exceptions, allowing one or two blacks to receive better treatment than the whole, was efficacious to demonstrating that one black who was sufficiently deferential to the established order, not trying to overturn it, of course, could succeed beyond even the dreams of all other blacks in the U.S. It is from this, of course, that we get the professional athletes, I should say entertainers in general, because you won't hear anything even remotely political from most of them, particularly the ones who are wildly successful, unless, of course, the okay is given from above. Now, with that having been said, we do have some exceptions to the exception rule. Like, for example, the Mexico City 2, that would be Tommy Smith and John Carlos. And they show that every once in a while, an entertainer will have something to say and will do whatever they can within the system to address their concerns. Yes, I know that Smith and Carlos were not professionals, but Colin Kaepernick comes to mind today as the exception. And we've got the NFLer, Bennett, who has refused a trip to Israel. So now we've got some professional athletes today who are quietly taking stands. What's interesting, though, is that they basically are alone. If you look at what happened with Colin Kaepernick, the rest of his fellow footballers remain silent, standing on the sidelines, even in the face of his protest. He was alone in expressing in public his conscience. And lest anyone get any ideas about organizing and mobilizing around those few acts of conscience from the exceptions who in turn have allowed a select few of others to monetize their talents, the entire community will be controlled by other means of state policy. That's the fourth rail. That's crack cocaine, and explains why the U.S. government in 2000, in the year 2000, entered into an agreement with the Sinaloa cartel in Mexico and told them that they could have unfettered access to the U.S. drug market if they used the city of Chicago as their gateway. From Chicago then, Sinaloa drugs spread to Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, New York City, Cincinnati and Columbus, Detroit and Milwaukee. And according to the testimony of one Sinaloa insider from Chicago, the drugs then traveled, quote unquote, everywhere. Now, this is interesting not only because it's, of course, illegal for the U.S. government to do this, but these cities solidified Sinaloa control over drugs entering the U.S. from Mexico. Sinaloa controlled every place else, but were weak in the northeastern part of the U.S. So this arrangement with the DEA ensured that Sinaloa would gain control of the entire U.S. drug market. And at a time when so-called trade deals were stripping good-paying jobs from semi-skilled workers, drug dealing could easily become a substitute because, as Ricky Freeway Ross has said, the supply was unlimited. And Mike Rupert, along with Gary Webb, busted this all wide open for all the world to know. Just for the record, I tried to hire Gary Webb on my congressional staff, or I should say your congressional staff, because those are public dollars, so that he could safely engage in more truth-telling from Washington, D.C. But he turned me down because he didn't want to be so far away from his children. That was the first thing that came out of his mouth. So Mike Rupert was a Gary Webb kind of guy. But Mike didn't just stop with the CIA attempted recruitment of him so that the drugs could be steered into the black community. No, he went on to tackle and solve the riddle of 911. Mike, using his LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department, investigator skills, knew the who, what, when, where, why, and how of September 11th, long before the rest of us, and wrote his finding in his epic book, Crossing the Rubicon. And that's when his troubles truly began. Mike was forced to flee the country at one point, and when he came back, he remained with us for a short while, visited me in Atlanta on his way back to the West Coast, and lived for a while on the ranch of a friend before taking his own life. At least that's what we've all been told by those closest to Mike, and I have no reason to doubt them, even though every fiber of my being does doubt them. Mike Rupert was my friend, and I miss him dearly. I know Mike would love tonight's show as we introduce you to a social media investigation of the who, what, when, where, how, and why of something that has taken the internet by storm. And that is the WikiLeaks Vault 7 tweets. So tonight, in the absence of any treatment at all of the WikiLeaks tweets by special interest corporate media, we will join in the discussion and try to dissect exactly what WikiLeaks could possibly mean by its Vault 7 tweets. That's why here at Cynthia's Midnight Oil, you can count on me to go even where the highest paid corporate special interest media personalities are afraid to tread. Therefore, I want you to consider this show as your liberated zone, where the shackles on your mind are the first to go. You may get shocked, maybe even outraged, but my hope is that you will not think about things in the same way, that you will have a disorienting dilemma that will cause you to completely rethink what you thought was conventional and what you consider to be wisdom. Remember, the great South African anti-apartheid leader Steve Biko said that the greatest weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed.
Shuri Doshak Mondoli, ekhon apnader kan asteche Stoic Dishon gaan. To tatari apnader Twin One-er volume on kore. Jate fight ta jaitam hoye jay. Yeah, Rajiv Kazi and Mana. Bring it to you live from New York City. Double on the beat, man. Yeah. Woo!
Fellow Americans, this week our hearts are with the people of Louisiana and Mississippi. Families have lost their homes, businesses, and livelihoods after devastating tornadoes swept through many, many communities. My administration will make sure they have the support that they need and really desperately want. We're going to take care of them. It's remarkable to see Americans across the country come together to help families rebuild their lives. That is the beauty of the American spirit. There's nothing like it. There is a great spirit all over the country, and that spirit is what we will need to rebuild America, to, as I have said so often, make America great again. On Tuesday, I was pleased to host at the White House the CEO of Intel, who announced that Intel will invest $7 billion in a new manufacturing facility in Arizona, creating thousands of new American jobs. That's what we want, new American jobs and good jobs. Intel decided to move forward with this project because they know we are totally committed to lifting the regulatory and tax burdens that are hurting American innovation and companies. In fact, we are in the process right now of working on a major tax reform that will massively reduce taxes on our workers and businesses. We want to make it much easier to do business in America, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to make it also much harder for companies to leave. They're not just going to say bye-bye and fire everybody. There will be consequences. I want America to be the great jobs magnet of the world. But we can't do that if we don't stop the wasteful rules and excessive taxes that make it impossible for companies to compete. Every hour of every day, my administration is focused on creating jobs for our people, and I mean good jobs. More jobs, better jobs, higher paying jobs, that's our mission. This week, I also met with sheriffs and police chiefs from across the country. I pledged to them that we would stand with the incredible men and women of law enforcement, and so too will our great new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. My administration is committed to your security, which is why we will continue to fight to take all necessary and legal action to keep terrorists, radical and dangerous extremists, from ever entering our country. We will not allow our generous system of immigration to be turned against us as a tool for terrorism and truly bad people. We must take firm steps today to ensure that we are safe tomorrow. We will defend our country, protect our Constitution, and deliver real prosperity for our people. God bless you. God bless America. Have a great week.
Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network. Nigeria, Bolivia, Chile, Angola, Puerto Rico, y Tunisia, Argelia, Venezuela, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Mozambique, Costa Rica, Camerún, Congo, Cuba, Somalia, México, República Dominica, Tanzania, fuera. Okay, so now let's jump into this WikiLeaks Vault 7 and see what the heck has the internet so hot. It all started on February 4th when WikiLeaks tweeted a link to the FBI's vault where the declassified documents are made available to the public. This particular link is to part 6 of the Hillary Clinton email trove. Seems that one file containing several electronic devices was walked into the FBI Washington field office, and that file, entitled Evidence of Hillary Clinton's Misuse of Classified Documents, contained Clinton emails and Undersecretary Patrick Kennedy emails. Other devices from other Clinton and state staffers were also obtained. But some of the names were redacted. And so we don't know from these records, at least at a passing glance, who turned in the walk-in documents and what FBI agents were working on the case. WikiLeaks tweeted this, and I quote, full text, FBI quietly releases Part 6 of its Hillary Clinton investigation. And that's the end of it. That's what they quoted. And that was it until later the same day, WikiLeaks tweeted this, quote unquote, "What is hashtag Vault 7? And they had a photo of the Svalbard seed bank in Norway, with that tweet. Okay. On the same day, I remember a story about Morocco and Syria making a withdrawal of some of their seeds that had been deposited there. Okay, so it's all quiet on the WikiLeaks front until on February 5th, it tweeted, quote unquote, "Where is hashtag Vault 7? And the photo accompanying that tweet is a black and white rendering of something wrapped and stored in an underground bunker. Later, I discovered that the internet researchers identified it as a Nazi underground storage facility. Okay, all's quiet. And then on February 6th, WikiLeaks tweets, quote unquote, "When is hashtag Vault 7? And the photo accompanying that tweet is a jet engine fired up in some kind of test facility or something. Then on February 7th, WikiLeaks tweeted, "Who is hashtag Vault 7? And the accompanying photo for this was a photo of three covers for infamous spies with photos of Bradley Manning, Julian Assange, and Edward Snowden. By now, the internet is just buzzing." But WikiLeaks wasn't done yet, okay? On February 8th, WikiLeaks tweeted, "Why is hashtag Vault 7? And the photo is of someone welding steel in the dark, kind of reminiscent of the World Trade Center towers on 911. So now the 911 truthers get active and they get involved. So they begin to wonder, what the heck is going on? What the heck is being hinted at by WikiLeaks? Does WikiLeaks have some 911 emails or something? Do they have some 911 papers? What's going on? But even this didn't have the internet on fire, as WikiLeaks wasn't finished with their tweets. So then, on February 9th, WikiLeaks tweeted, "How did hashtag Vault 7 make its way to WikiLeaks?" And the photo is a black and white vintage looking photo of a woman at what looks like a kind of postal box. So now, here's the thing. That was the last WikiLeaks tweet on hashtag Vault 7 for a while, but we still don't know what, if anything, is going to come next. We don't know if WikiLeaks is finished, and we'll just have to wait and see. But right now, the internet is burning up. It is hot with WikiLeaks and hashtag Vault 7. So, everyone who's a political junkie and social media maven wants to know, what is Vault 7? So by now, I hope you're as curious as I am about Vault 7. WikiLeaks has used the Zygarnik effect to capture the spirit around hashtag Vault 7. What's the Zygarnik effect? Well, of course, it's a little theory that I learned while I was doing my research so I can bring it to you. So the Zeigarnik effect says that tasks will be remembered if they're not completed. So see, that's why people tune in every day to look at the soap operas, because the story isn't over yet. All the story hasn't been told. So you feel like you're not complete. You're not done until you get the rest of the story. So the task is associated with a certain tension, and that tension is going to remain in place until the task is completed. After completion of the task, what the Zeigarnik effect tells us is that the tension is released and then the matter is practically forgotten, with little memory of any of the details. But you'll remember every detail until you get the rest of the story. So WikiLeaks, from February 4th through February 9th, activated the Zeigarnik effect and put its audience on edge, as if it were Days of Our Lives or General Hospital. The only thing is that we know that whatever WikiLeaks has to say, it is infinitely more important politically than anything we'll see on any daytime soap opera. Thus, the question remains, what in the world is Vault 7? Only adding to the mystery, and of course the number of topics that could be covered in Vault 7, WikiLeaks then retweeted a video concerning its 11 most important discoveries. Thus, the mystery of Vault 7 begins first, for us, from Press for Truth, which is a 911 truth group that did a story, a pretty good story, on hashtag Vault 7 and what it might be.
This is Dan Dix here, reporting for Press for Truth. A series of cryptic tweets have just been released by WikiLeaks over the last few days, asking the questions, what is Vault 7? Where is Vault 7? When is Vault 7? Who is Vault 7? And finally, why is Vault 7? And today we're going to break this all down for you. What does all this really mean? Are there hidden messages within these tweets? Well, the first thing I noticed was this first tweet here came in a series of cryptic messages following this one. FBI quietly releases part 6 of its Hillary Clinton investigation, and it includes a link to the website vault.fbi.gov. And when we open this up, we see that it contains a treasure trove of leaked emails dealing with Hillary Clinton. So that obviously begs the question, is Vault 7 just the next batch of emails following number 6 that is waiting to be released, that is going to incriminate Hillary Clinton and Wiener and all the rest of them? Or is there more to the picture than meets the eye? Well, first let's start with this first tweet that was released on February 4th at 2:38 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, asking the question, what is Vault 7? It's a curious question, but what's even more intriguing is the fact that it features this picture here of a strange-looking facility located in some snowy mountains somewhere. So to make some sense of this, let's get it from the horse's mouth, and we'll do a search on WikiLeaks' own website here for the words Vault 7. And as you see, thousands of results have come up. But right away, a few things are catching my eye here, like this DS interest. FBI unveils the vault, including unseen 9/11 records. What's this all about? This is coming from the Global Intelligence Files, same as these two here. And we'll get back to that one in a minute. But first, I wanted to show you this. I noticed Arctic Seed Vault, largest in the world. Okay, so what's this one all about? Well, we open that up to find out that this is talking about a doomsday global seed vault. And this is known as the Svalbard Global Seed Vault, and just a quick Google image search of that term shows that when we put in that term, we search it, and yes, indeed, this is the same place pictured in the cryptic WikiLeaks tweet. All right, so what else does WikiLeaks have to say about this particular place that it tweeted out an image of? The seed vault holds duplicate samples or spare copies of seeds that are held in gene banks worldwide. The seed vault will provide insurance against the loss of seeds in gene banks, as well as a refuge for seeds in the case of large-scale, regional, or global crisis. All right, very, very interesting stuff here, especially considering we know that WikiLeaks itself is a similar operation in that it receives leaked documents, which are duplicates that whistleblowers have created and stolen and handed off to WikiLeaks for safekeeping. So let's keep that in mind as we move on to cryptic message number two. Where is Vault 7? And here we see pictured a famous shot of this salt mine in Germany that was discovered in 1945 to be hiding valuables that were stolen by the Nazis. And according to the National Archives, this place was holding tons of gold. It had gold bullion, gold Reichsmarks, British pounds, French francs, American gold pieces. It was just a massive pile of gold that was hidden underground. So again, this begs the question, does this allude back to these missing 9/11 files and the fact that the World Trade Center contained vaults in their basements that were housing tons and tons of gold? Is there a connection here? And just when we're thinking that things can't get any weirder, another cryptic tweet was released, this one asking the question, when is Vault 7? And it includes a photo of this jet engine being tested. A Pratt & Whitney F-119 PW-100 engine at the test cell or hush house. And from what I understand, these hush houses are also sometimes referred to as vaults. So stepping back is a picture starting to develop here. Well, let's move on to the next cryptic tweet, which asked the question, who is Vault 7? And it depicts photographs of three infamous spies, Bradley Manning, Julian Assange, and Edward Snowden, who are responsible for some of the biggest leaks we have seen. And Julian Assange himself has even alluded to the fact that 2017 is going to be an even bigger year than 2016 was in terms of significant leaks, and to help them to prepare for the showdown. So is the who in this series of cryptic tweets referring to the ones who are going to face off against the globalists in 2017? Well, only time is going to tell. But finally, today, WikiLeaks released the final question in your classic journalist's 5 W's questions, and that being, why is Vault 7? And this one, folks, depicts a photo that was taken from this article here, Keeping Structures Strong, from the Whitman Air Force Base. And pictured here is Staff Sergeant Adam Boyd of the 509th Civil Engineer Squadron Structural Supervisor as he welds a box blade for a snowplow. And I did a little bit more digging into the 509th Civil Engineer Squadron, and I discovered they also deal with disaster response and explosive ordnance disposal. This is getting even more interesting, and a lot of people have pointed to the fact that the image itself depicts someone melting steel, perhaps more cryptic imagery. And getting back to the notion that this may be alluding to the release of new 9/11 information, we're starting to get a bit more of a clearer picture here. So I'm going to entertain an idea for you right now. And mind you, this is pure speculation. But how about this? WikiLeaks is holding information that is a duplicate of what the FBI also has on file. They know about the gold buried underneath the World Trade Centers. They know about the engines that were remote controlled. They know what it took to melt the steel beams using professional demolition teams. And they are warning the FBI that if they don't release this information, we will. Well, don't hold your breath, folks. WikiLeaks is dangling the 9/11 carrot in front of our noses. And if this is really about 9/11 or Clinton's emails that's going to reveal massive fraud and corruption, why not release this information right away rather than giving the intelligence community some sort of ultimatum here? So is this going to be the smoking gun that we've been waiting for? Or will this be yet another limited hangout being offered just to simply keep us at bay? Guys, I want to believe the former, but I'm leaning towards the latter. Let me know what you think in the comment sections below. Is this one all about Hillary? Is this about 9/11? Are we even going to get any of the answers to any of these questions moving forward?
This is Cynthia McKinney, and you're listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network. So the chilling Zygarnik effect and the video caused internet researchers to go wild, researching the photos and every aspect, no matter how minute it was, of what WikiLeaks could possibly mean by Vault 7. Whatever it is, we know it's going to be a doozy. Because I, for one, believe there's too much secrecy in our government. And that has set the stage for the apparatus of the state to be swiped right from under us while our eyes were wide open. And because of the collusion of the prostitute media, those who tried to call out what was happening with our government were all treated with disdain. Even Snowden is treated with disdain, even by some of my brand new friends on my social media, because they still don't get it yet that our government has become a criminal enterprise and will only get worse and more deeply embedded in the crime culture until we, the people, and that requires whistleblowers to help us know what the heck is going on so we can stop it. I get so many messages from folks today telling me that they used to believe what the press wrote about me until social media gave them an opportunity to hear from me unfiltered and to hear others praise the work that I was trying to do back then on vaccines and on Pentagon corruption and on mistreatment of our soldiers and on our corrupt foreign policy and on organ trafficking, drug trafficking, trafficking in women and little girls being done with our tax dollars. And now, 15 years later, and I'm out of Congress and I get the messages of support. Mind you, I appreciate every message of support that I get. But I could have done so much more if I had had that support 15 years ago. With that having been said, the government is now so out of control, I don't know if we'll even be able to reel it back in. And Trump doesn't have the right team around him to turn around the executive branch, let alone the whole country. Anyway, here's what a fellow who calls himself Sticks has to say, and he's got quite a healthy internet audience. This is what he said to his audience. Now, I don't know him, but he does give a pretty good interpretation of what's going on in this video entitled WikiLeaks Awes the World with Intrigue. And watch out for, he's got a couple of expletive deleteds in here, and they're not deleted.
All right, YouTube, WikiLeaks has been posting cryptic tweets lately regarding this Vault 7. And nobody's really quite sure what it pertains to. It's really a lot of guesswork because WikiLeaks, while it promotes transparency, you know, it's dumping secretive documents, stuff that shows corruption in governments and so forth, that those governments and other groups would not generally want to be public, like looking at early drafts of the TPP. WikiLeaks is fucking instrumental in getting public opinion against what would have been a terrible so-called trade deal, because nobody knew anything about it till the drafts were being dumped. It was WikiLeaks largely that did that. WikiLeaks cracked wide open the Clinton campaign, even though they've made it clear, no, we're not Trump fans, we dump stuff on him, but he's just got better security. He's less inept. He may be just as corrupt, but he's less inept than the DNC. And so there's not a whole fucking lot we can do about it. Somebody please throw us a bone here. And I think that's the truth. Some people thought they were compromised, and they're like, oh, they're partnered with Putin, and Trump is partnered with Putin, and so it's part of a conspiracy. I don't think that. I just think that he's better at security, honestly. I think that's the best explanation. Nobody managed to fish one of his lowly employees within his campaign the way they did Hillary Clinton's people, which is like, it's the most hilarious way to get your presidential campaign derailed. Some lowly employee, some mid-level employee or something, was looking up porn and took a phishing link and compromised the whole system because it was poorly guarded. That's what happened. But with the Vault 7 stuff, they keep posting these like cryptic pictures. They're like, oh, what is Vault 7? Where is Vault 7? Why is Vault 7? Who is Vault 7? Stuff like that. Some people have suggested that it has something to do with they're trying to pressure the FBI. Like the FBI begged them not to release, you know, some slew of documents while they're doing the Clinton crap. The next vault, FBI vault up in line on Clinton to be dumped would be literally called Vault 7. There are six that have been released, apparently, and the next one's the seventh. So they're thinking maybe WikiLeaks is getting impatient, holding them to their end of the bargain and just sort of pushing them along, keeping them moving so that they don't fucking wait too long. You know, you've got Jeff Sessions and so forth in there. If Clinton really is as corrupt as I imagine she is, and if people around her are as inept as they've proven themselves to be, there's at least the possibility she ends up getting prosecuted. I'm not going to hold my breath. It's like all throughout the campaign, when people were talking about Hillary's corrupt, people around her are don't know what they're doing, and so she's probably exposed herself, she's probably going to jail. I said no. I said don't expect that to happen. There's a remote chance. And for a very brief shining moment, it looked like Comey might actually go for the jugular, say, enough of this, we've got to do something about the fact that this is going on. But I never expected beforehand or after that anything was going to come of it. I didn't know whether they'd exonerate her at all, but what Comey did was sort of a half-assed approach. He said, well, we're just not going to seek to prosecute. Yeah, she lied here, she lied there. Classified info was sent, but there was no, she wasn't trying to do anything criminal. Not that the FBI ever fucking cared about that in any other case in American history. So we're just going to let her off. To the point other people now blamed for similar things are trying to invent a Clinton defense and say, well, there's a precedent now. You let Clinton go for doing, you know, far worse than what our client, our, you know, the defendant has done in some random case. And they haven't made inroads doing that so far, but eventually you're going to have to acknowledge that a precedent, legally speaking, was sent for a bureau not to be able to prosecute somebody simply because there was no essence of willful wrongdoing. They weren't trying to break the law. They either were ignorant of what the law was, which has never been an excuse within U.S. legal system, or they knew that they were doing something shifty, but they weren't aiding any enemy. They weren't doing, they were just dicking off, essentially. But there are other possibilities, too. And they range from the more sensible to the more fringe. Another thing people have suggested is, oh, well, WikiLeaks has documents proving climate change is not made by man, that there's a war coming, that there's documents on Russia or China or something showing long-term strategic planning for an invasion of the U.S. That would never happen, but like an attack on the United States. Or that it involves ISIS, you know, the Syrian war, something shifty Obama did. Those are all more or less sane explanations. Then you get more into, like, the fringe, like the beyond Alex Jones fringe of, oh, it has something to do with Antarctica, has something to do with an upcoming doomsday, an asteroid is coming, we can't see it because it's, like, flying behind the sun or something like that. It's going to hit us, and the elites are going down to Antarctica to sit in their bunkers to wait out Armageddon. And so forth. I would hazard a guess that the chance that that's the explanation for WikiLeaks tweets is fairly low. I prefer the more simplistic explanation. I think the Clinton explanation is most likely, because even the term fits what we would be seeing. The next vault to be released is Vault 7, if there is another vault on Clinton's crimes and wrongdoing. So that would fit. It would make sense in a verbal sense, not just a common sense way. But then there are, yeah, it is pop. Maybe it's something on Trump. Maybe it is the existence of some doomsday bunker. Maybe what we're looking at is like the revelation of an old conspiracy. Oh, yeah, the government maintained a massive bunker during the Cold War, fully stocked and everything out in some mountain somewhere. And its active plan was to start a nuclear war for a while. And then everyone retreated in. Russia gets destroyed. Then they come out and repopulate. And here's their papers. Here's like the breeding program or something. Maybe. Look at Operation Northwoods or something like that. Stranger things have been suggested at different times by U.S. Military, U.S. bureaus, the government itself. It's possible, but I think the Clinton explanation is perhaps the most likely and the most rational.
Meanwhile, Ecuador is in the midst of its presidential elections, which will take place on February 19th. And you just know the Hillary neoliberal neocon globalist faction of the U.S. deep state is doing everything in its power to destabilize the country since Rafael Correa, Ecuador's transformational and charismatic president, is not on the ballot. One of the candidates has said that on day one of the new administration, Julian Assange, will be out of the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Therefore, there's a lot of expectation that we might find out from WikiLeaks who or what Vault 7 is on that date. Remember, Hillary wanted to drone Assange, so maybe President Trump will not interfere in the election the way we know Hillary would have. And thus, hopefully, the people of Ecuador can have a legitimate election whose results actually reflect their wishes. In the meantime, Anonymous Scandinavia got involved and started tweeting hashtag Vault7, hashtag it's time. So I guess I'll go tweet the same, and we'll all just have to wait with bated breath, I guess, until WikiLeaks tells us the rest of this intriguing story. I assume that in due course, we will get our answers to the who, what, when, where, why, and how of the WikiLeaks Vault 7. Is it child porn? Is it Pizzagate? Does it have to do with 911? Is it more from the Clinton Foundation? Is it a faked moon landing? Is it aliens in Antarctica? What is it? The Mike Rupert that I know and loved would not waste any time getting to the bottom of this one, too. Rest in peace, Mike. I know there's a lot of folks out there who miss you just as much as I do.
Now, of course, I want peace on the streets, but realistically, painting perfect pictures ain't never worked.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and you've been listening to Cynthia's Midnight Oil on the Pacifica Radio Network. It's pledge time at KPFK, and if you like this show, please show your love by donating at kpfk.org.
Keep my weapon, must protect myself. The promise of a better tomorrow ain't never reached me. Plus, my teachers was too petrified in class to teach me. Sipping Thunderbird and Grey Kool-Aid, calling Earl since my stomach was empty.